That man's ride. After he was shot, they questioned me about that vandalism shit, but I was recording that day so they couldn't pin it on me. If the cops weren't so set on frying my ass, they'd be looking for the guy who did that. He's probably your murderer. I nibbled on my thumbnail. I didn't think DC was guilty, but the police did have some reason to think that he was, and it wasn't just because he was black. I know you answered some of these questions in court, but could you tell me how it was that you ended up standing over J.J. Money with the murder weapon a stone's throw away? Hey, I've done some stupid shit in my time. J.J. Money and I was never friends. The man was always dogging me, and I've said some stuff too, but the shit I said was true. So J.J. called me that night all hopped up on some dope, and he's threatening me. The motherfucker was even saying shit about my family and my lady. That shit don't fly with me. I told him he should say that smack to my face. Then I hear him talking to some guy in the background because you know that nigga never knew his own mind. Then he gets back on the phone and tells me to meet him at Nell's. But he never made it to Nell's. No, man, and that was weird. J.J. Money was a pussy, but he knew how the game was played. You don't challenge a brother and not show. Not in our world. That's the kind of shit you don't live down. If, while in a drunken stupor, I had called some guy with a violent criminal history to tell him off, and that guy then asked to meet me, I'd be a no-show, too. But that was me. So you went looking for him? Oh, yeah, and I found him, all right. Fucker was bleeding all over the place. I should have just taken off. That would have looked suspicious, too. There was no winning, you know? I was going to call the police, but somebody else heard the gunshots and had already made the call. So there I was. The nigger had been shot with his own motherfucking weapon, and they still pinned it on me. I had a piece. If I wanted to kill the man, why didn't I use that? How the fuck did they think I got my hands on his gun? The whole thing was a setup, and I walked into it.
Mr. Katz hopped up next to me. I moved my feet from under me so as to make a flat surface for him on my lap. You had your gun with you that night. How come?
You never know when you're going to have to defend yourself. When you do gangster rap, some fucker's always trying to get a piece of you. Shit, J.J. Money and I weren't gonna shoot each other. We're rap stars. The police are always gunning for us. We don't need to be making things easy for them.
I knew D.C. Smooth was telling me the truth, but he had told me absolutely nothing that I could use to prove it. Yes, he confirmed that J.J. Money knew Mark, but I basically already knew that. I mentally reviewed what had been said so far. What was it? There had to be something.
Yo, you still there?
The guy talking in the background to J.J. Money, any idea who it was?
No, my defense attorney drilled me on that, too. Fuck if I know, I could barely hear the man. It was a white guy, though, not a brother.
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I wasn't paying good attention at the time, but I remember thinking that he just sounded different. Not like the people J.J. Money normally ran with.
I swallowed and let my eyes travel up to the ceiling. Maybe he had an accent?
Yeah, he might have. If he did, it was minor. Not like those full-on Puerto Rican dudes.
He wasn't sure. There was still a chance that it wasn't Anatoly. But that chance was pretty slim.
Hey, my time's almost up. You got any more questions?
No, you gave me the information I needed. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me know what's up. I want to hold my kid. I just want to hold him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. I'll do my best. I hung up the phone and looked at Mr. Katz. Oh, God. This shit is fucked up.
Chapter 16. Knowledge only equates to power if you can figure out what to do with it. Sex, drugs, and murder.
I couldn't help but be impressed when Donato chauffeured Marcus up to the front door of Lulu's in a new Porsche 911. Apparently, crap sells. Or maybe people just wanted to give Donato money. That wasn't such a stretch. I wanted to give him money. But then, I wanted to stuff the money into a G-string. Donato draped his arm over the door.
Sophie, how are you?
Hanging in there.
Nice car. Yes, it is very freeing. I feel it helps me to release my creativity.
Now, why hadn't I thought of that? I could probably be twice the writer I am if I just bought myself a Porsche. Marcus leaned over and gave Donato a little peck on the cheek before getting out of the car to present me with a bouquet of calla lilies.
It's a little I'm glad you're not dead present.
Do they make hallmarks for that?
Probably. They make cards for families of suicide victims. Why not ones for potential homicide victims? It could go something like this. Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm really happy that you're not sleeping with the fishes.
I grimaced.
Too soon?
I must go, Donato said, unfastening his seatbelt long enough to take off his jacket, thus immediately getting our attention. Marcus, I'll meet you tonight at the Black Cat.
9 o'clock, sweetie.
Donato smiled and gave me a casual wave before riding off in a blaze of glory.
A 9/11, huh? Are you sure he's not bi? I got you a bouquet. Stay away from my man. I fingered the arrangement. I get calla lilies and you get laid. That's fair. Don't forget, I'm buying lunch, too. It's gonna take one hell of a creme caramel to make up for missing out on that. Maybe I'll throw in a cookie.
Marcus escorted me in, and over lunch I filled him in on all my latest discoveries. At the beginning of the meal, Marcus was ordering various courses with his characteristic enthusiasm and zest. By the end, the waiter was clearing away full plates that he had barely even noticed. He placed both hands flat on the table as if that would help ground him.
You do see how the killer was led to you.
Well, the guy seems to go for people in the entertainment industry who depict violence in their work. I'm on the outskirts of the entertainment industry, but my work is...
J.J. Money had a role in a Tolsky production, Marcus interjected. They must have had some contact during the time the killer was planning the first murder that led him to Tolsky. Tolsky met with you to talk about the screenplay you were going to write less than a month before he died. That led the killer to you.
I chewed thoughtfully on a ginger snap.
God, you're totally right. That was so perceptive of you.
Not really. It was pretty obvious.
Work with me. I'm trying not to feel like an idiot.
Not an idiot, honey, just a little frazzled. He rattled the ice in his drink. I agree that you can't rule out that bacon guy, but I still think it's probably that bastard Anatoly. He was in New York when J.J. Money was killed and he had direct access to Tolsky. I mean, hello, can we spell suspicious?
I slid down in my chair. I know, but I just keep hoping that there's another explanation. I used my spoon to make an artistic creation with the remainder of my dessert. What about the woman Tolsky was seeing in San Francisco? How do you think she fits into it?
She may not.
Hell, we don't even know if the girl exists. Marcus placed his ankle over the opposite knee. When you met with Tolsky, did he say anything useful?
Useful? You mean like, I'm being stalked by a murderous maniac named Joe, and I'm having an extramarital affair with his sister who happens to live in San Francisco?
That would be useful.
He didn't say that.
Marcus examined the exposed beams on the restaurant's ceiling.
Did he talk about anything other than work stuff?
No, not really. I chewed on the nail of my pinky.
Wait, he did say he really liked San Francisco.
That would not be useful.
He said he liked the European feeling of the city, the little theaters and the galleries.
The galleries! I dropped my sugar-coated spoon. Marcus, he said he liked the galleries.
And we should care about that because...
Because Anatoly said that he knew the owner of the Sussman Gallery. He said they used to room together in New York.
That boy's name just keeps popping up.
Don't you see, Marcus? I gripped the table to keep myself from jumping out of my seat. It's not just that we may have established another connection between Anatoly and Tolsky, but we now know of someone else who knows Anatoly, someone we can talk to. Marcus cocked his head to the side.
It's something.
Yes, it is. And something is infinitely better than the nothing I've been working with. I grabbed the credit card that Marcus had left on the table and waved it in the air for our waiter to see. I don't know what your plans are today, but it's time for me to become an art collector. I was walking so fast that even Marcus with his long legs had to make an effort to keep up.
Honey, the gallery isn't going anywhere. There's no need for us to get ourselves all sweaty and mussed.
We're on the verge of something big. I can feel it.
We burst into the gallery, prompting the relieved smiles of the two other patrons who could now escape the attention of the commissioned sales staff. A pudgy male associate with a high forehead and a low ponytail waddled over to us with a welcoming grin.
"Hello, how are you both today?"
"We're fine," I said. I made it a point to make eye contact. That was important because if I didn't, I might actually have to focus on his nicely cut Italian red blazer that he had paired with a fuchsia silk shirt.
"Actually, maybe you could help us."
"That is why I'm here. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Randolph. Perhaps there is a specific artist you are looking for?" Marcus and I exchanged looks. He might be a Randolph now, but there was little doubt that at birth he had been a Ralph.
"No, we're actually looking for the owner."
"Oh, I'm sorry. This is my friend Marcus, and my name is Sophie Katz. I'm a novelist. Perhaps you've read some of my books? They're usually located on the book racks for the New York Times bestsellers." Anyone who called himself Randolph would have to be impressed to be cooperative.
"Oh, of course. Of course I have.
Liar. How marvelous to make your acquaintance. You are in luck. Usually it's difficult to catch Mr. Sussman here. However, this afternoon he's been in the office all day. I'll go check to see if he's available. In the meantime, please feel free to look around. We have some new pieces that are absolutely divine."
Marcus stood with his hands on his hips and stared after Ralph as he went off to find Sussman.
"Divine? Even when I'm in full camp mode, I do not use the word divine." I shrugged. "Can't blame a guy for trying. Maybe you could take him under your wing and teach him how to be a subtle queen."
"Uh-uh. It's a talent you have to be born with."
He glanced around the room.
"Oh, look, there's one of Donato's paintings."
I searched my mind for something positive to say.
"Wow, it looks like he used a paintbrush this time. That's good."
"The man is beautiful, he's rich, he gives a blowjob that Heidi Fleisch couldn't compete with, so who cares if his paintings look like the work of an angry kindergartner? Somebody's buying.
As long as you can keep a sense of humor about it."
"It's easy to keep your sense of humor when you're being driven around in a Porsche."
Ralph returned with a tall, skinny man with blonde hair that was cut in a manner that would have looked rakish on a teenager, but just silly on a guy who had quite obviously cleared 40. He extended his hand to me, then to Marcus.
"Gary Sussman, how can I be of assistance?"
"Mr. Sussman, I'm so glad to meet you. As Randolph probably already told you, my name is Sophie Katz and I'm a novelist. I'm writing a book in which one of my characters owns a gallery. Anatoly Derinsky suggested that you might be able to give me some insight into the art world so I can give my story a sense of authenticity."
Sussman brightened.
"Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to answer your questions. And please, call me Gary."
"All right, Gary, call me Sophie. And this is Marcus."
"I just came along for the art," Marcus said.
"Randolph, show me something that will move me. I just so want to be moved."
"I know exactly what you mean."
Ralph joined his hands in front of him with a clap. "There are some very stirring pieces by an artist by the name of Rossetti. May I show you?"
"That would just be divine."
Marcus followed a floating Ralph while I let Gary lead me into his office. I surveyed the space.
"Wow, what a great room."
I sat down on something that resembled a chair, but then again it might have been a modern Chinese torture device.
"The artist Marion Dominic did it for me. I consider the room itself a piece of art."
"For good reason. It's as stunning as the art you show here." I was having a hard time reconciling what I knew about Anatoly and his apparent friendship with this man. My interactions with Anatoly on the night of Donato's opening had made it abundantly clear to me that Anatoly was intolerant of people who were overly enlightened. While Gary was so excessively enlightened, he was practically glowing.
Gary leaned forward in his chair. "I hope you don't mind my saying this, but you have a very exotic look. What exactly is your nationality?"
There was something about this man that just made a person want to mess with him.
"My mother is Egyptian, and my father is Israeli. They met at a party celebrating the Camp David Accords."
He was silent for a beat, clearly unsure if he should believe me. Then a smile crept into his face.
"That is the most fantastic thing I've ever heard."
I wasn't sure if by fantastic he meant the story was wonderful or a pile of bull,
but I decided not to press it.
So, Anatoly suggested you talk to me? Gary asked.
Yeah, he kind of mentioned it in passing. We don't know each other that well. We're more acquaintances than friends. The lie seemed more palatable than the truth, which was that I'd be sleeping with him if he wasn't trying to kill me.
I'm not sure anyone knows Anatoly that well. I used to live with him, and I still have no idea who he is.
Oh? I got the impression that you were close.
From Anatoly?
Gary's eyebrows elevated a notch.
That's interesting. We lived together briefly in New York while I was getting my doctorate at NYU. But at the time, all we had in common was the need to split the rent on a cheap Manhattan apartment. I'm speaking in relative terms, of course. In actuality, the words cheap and Manhattan are mutually exclusive. He chuckled at his little joke. I tried to.
Was he a contractor in New York?
A contractor? Is he a contractor now?
I paused, trying to come up with a good response.
Maybe.
I might have misheard him.
There, that was brilliant.
Odd. He never so much as changed a light bulb while we were roommates. How things change.
What did he do in New York?
Gary wrinkled his brow.
You know, I'm not sure. As I said, we were never close. In the few months we lived together, I don't think we ever had a single conversation that lasted for more than 5 sentences. He had a tendency to keep to himself.
But you must have checked his references when he moved in.
He was living in the apartment before me. I was the boarder, so to speak.
I dug my fingers into the leather of my purse. This guy had to be more helpful than this.
So maybe he was a contractor in New York and you just didn't know it?
No, I don't think he was a contractor.
Insurance.
I think he was in insurance.
Anatoly was an insurance salesman? Anatoly Dorinsky?
Gary laughed.
That doesn't seem to fit either, does it? As you can tell, I'm very fuzzy on the whole thing, but I do remember something about insurance.
Considering the nature of your relationship, or rather the lack thereof, I'm surprised he got back in contact with you.
Oh, that started off as a coincidence. The first time I saw him after we went our separate ways was about 7 months ago when Alex Tolsky brought him in.
He came in with Tolsky?
Yes, Anatoly was visiting the area, as was Alex. It was just a few months before he died, poor man.
Yes, that was horrible. I tried to keep my voice smooth. I already knew that Anatoly and Tolsky were friends, so why was it that every time that fact was confirmed, I got chills?
He was such a lovely man, Gary continued. They've crucified him in the papers, you know. All that talk about mental illness and alcoholism. In truth, the man was one of the most charming people I've ever met, not to mention brilliant. He had an incredible eye for art and was always interested in new talent. But then I forgot you knew him too, didn't you?
How did you know that? The only ones who knew that were some of the people who worked at Tolsky Productions and a handful of my friends, and none of those people would have interpreted my meeting with him once as my knowing him.
Anatoly told me.
My right hand went to my stomach.
Anatoly?
When did he tell you that?
About a month and a half ago. Perhaps 2 months. I don't remember the exact date. He had just moved here and wanted to stop in and say hello, although the only thing he appeared to be interested in discussing was Alex. I think the two of them were very close. His suicide must have been a major blow to him.
And then Anatoly started talking about me?
Yes, we were talking about Alex, and he mentioned that you had been writing a screenplay for him. He asked if Alex had ever brought you in. His description of you was very flattering, and, as it turns out, very accurate.
You must forgive me, but at the time I had never heard of you. Regrettably, I don't read a lot of fiction. Too busy reading trade magazines and trying to keep up with the fast-paced world of modern art. Which brings us back to the reason you came. How can I help you come to a better understanding of the art world?
The art world? Who the fuck cared about the art world? I had known Anatoly for less than 3 weeks, and yet he had been talking to Gary about me over 6 weeks ago. How long had Anatoly been stalking me? A month? Two? Three?
Gary was looking at me expectantly. I searched my mind for something to ask.
Okay, let's see. How can you tell the difference between great art and the work of some moron who likes to smear paint on a canvas like some mentally deficient preschooler? Gary's mouth formed the shape of a perfect O. Not a good question? Less than 60 seconds later, Gary was showing me out of his office. I walked up to Marcus, who was listening to Ralph explain to him the significance of a photograph depicting a woman peeing. It's a statement about our whole society. Well, of course it is. Everyone I know pees. Marcus, we have to go. Ralph took a step closer to Marcus. I was just showing him the works of... We have to go now. Marcus looked from me to Ralph and made the obvious choice. Sorry, Randy, she's the boss. But I promise to let you show me the poo-poo pictures next time. If I'd been walking fast before, I was breaking a whole new record this time. Marcus was trotting along next to me, shooting me looks of increasing alarm. Sophie! Sophie, slow down! What happened in there, honey? What's wrong? Everything's wrong. I stopped in the middle of the sidewalk, forcing the stream of pedestrians to maneuver around me. Anatoly was Gary's roommate in New York. Okay, but we knew that. He told him at the time that he was in insurance. Anatoly? Exactly, it's bullshit. But I bet you anything he's not a contractor either, which means we don't know what the hell he does. Marcus inched back to avoid being struck by my hands, which were wildly waving in the air. As far as we know, his name may not even be Anatoly. Yeah, but he's been using it for the last decade or so, so that's not all. Marcus tugged at the corners of his jacket and waited for me to drop the other shoe. He's been in there with Tolsky, and he came in after he died, too. He came in there and started asking Gary questions about me. When was that? Oh, about a month before we actually met. He described me to him, Marcus. Do you know what that means? If it was possible for a black man to turn pale, Marcus had done it. He stuffed his hands in his pockets with uncharacteristic awkwardness. Are you going to the police? Marcus, have you been listening to me at all for the last few days? I have nothing to bring to the police. All I have is coincidence after goddamn coincidence. But they're not coincidences. They're... Yeah, no kidding. I pressed the base of my palms into my forehead. He's planned this so perfectly. He's allowed me to learn everything and nothing all at the same time. The guy's more devious than Stalin. I looked up at Marcus. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me, and nobody can help me. I can help you. No, no, you can't. You can't, Dina can't, Marianne sure as hell can't. There is nothing anyone can do. Oh, shut up already. He grabbed my arm and pulled me closer. Of course there are things we can do. We just have to figure out what they are. Oh, great, that's encouraging. Do you really think I'm going to let some straight boy kill off my best client? We haven't even had the chance to do that streaky color thing we were talking about. You can't die before the streaky color thing. Well then, maybe we should book the appointment today. Or better yet, you could hook up with my embalmer. Enough! Marcus made the motion of a conductor silencing his orchestra. I have a perm to do in a half hour. A perm. Right. Wouldn't want you to be late for someone's perm. I am going to call Donato and cancel our plans tonight. You and I are having dinner. You're taking me out to eat twice in one day? Wow, it's amazing the things people will do for you when they expect your imminent death. You are not going to imminently die. Little smile lines flattered the corners of his eyes. So we'll go Dutch. I can't believe this. We will also devise a plan to stop Anatoly. He's not the only devious man alive, you know. He put his hand on his hip and snapped his fingers over his head. Let me tell you, sweetheart, I've built a whole reputation on my deviant behavior. Marcus, I really don't think there's anything... He put a gentle finger on my lips. We'll meet at PJ's oyster bed at 8:30. Now let's get back to your car. Your flowers need water, and you have to give me a ride to the salon. Right. The perm. Chapter 17. Actions speak louder than words, particularly when those actions are really stupid. Sex, drugs, and murder.
After dropping Marcus off, I drove around the city for a few hours. I considered driving right out of town. Anatoly wouldn't be expecting that. I could just go somewhere like where? And what was to keep him from finding me anywhere I went? He had proven himself to be highly mobile, and it wasn't like I was getting offers of hospitality from the Witness Protection Program. And what about my friends? And my family? My mother and sister were nuts, but I still loved them. I had to stay. I was by the edge of the bay now. Dusty pink clouds hovered behind a glistening Golden Gate Bridge. I would never leave San Francisco. This was where my life was. This was where my cat was. Shit, I'd forgotten to feed Mr. Katz. I looked again at the retreating sun. It would be dark by the time I got back to my apartment. But Mr. Katz was my baby. I couldn't just not feed him because I was scared. Well, maybe I could. Fuck. I turned the car around. That cat had better be thanking his lucky stars that he had an owner who would risk her very life in order to open a can of Purina. That had to make me the best pet owner alive. That, or just really, really stupid. I parked three blocks away and ran to my apartment, nearly knocking over a mother with a stroller and a Chinese lady with a cane. Nothing like being yelled at in two languages. I raced up the stairs and opened the door to find Mr. Katz, who looked like he was the one planning a murder. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry," I said on my way to the kitchen. Mr. Katz just scowled at me, and then, when I put out his food, gobbled it up. I checked the answering machine. Two messages. The first was Leah. "Sophie, pick up, it's me." "Sophie?" "Fine. Fine, don't pick up." "Sophie, I need you. Bob's just being horrible, and I think..." "Just call me, okay?"
Bob was being horrible? Bob was always horrible. She never seemed bothered by it before. I almost called her back without listening to the second message, but the machine was too fast for me.
"Hi, it's me." Anatoly's Russian voice filled the room. I stood completely still as I listened to the rest of the recording.
"I was hoping we could talk. I'll be out most of the evening, but you can call me on my cellular."
I forgot about Leah. I looked at the door and assured myself that it was double-locked. But there was still the window. If he climbed in through my window and killed me, I was going to sue my landlord. He was out there somewhere waiting for me to call and tell him I was home. Or was he? Maybe not. Maybe he was in my apartment right now. I grabbed the phone in one hand and found a knife for the other. I slowly made my way through the apartment. No one seemed to be there. Not in the shower or under the bed. Of course, there were the closets to consider. That presented a dilemma because to open a closet I had to either put down my only means of communication with the outside world or drop my weapon. I opted to put down the phone since the outside world had been of so little help lately. Nobody in the closets. That was good. But what if he was across the street and looking into my apartment right now? I quickly turned off all the lights. What next? I should peek through the bay window and try to spot him. I slammed my shin into the coffee table and almost killed my cat, but I did eventually make it to my destination. There were a few people walking around, but no Anatoly that I could see. I sat down Indian style on the pergo floor. If he had been telling me the truth about the Israeli and Russian armies, then he was well trained in the art of combat. He would bide his time, study his target, preferably without its knowing, formulate an efficient plan, and only then would he attack. If he had been watching me, he would have been clued into my awareness the minute I turned off the lights without leaving. He wouldn't be hanging out on the street waiting for me to see him. But I wasn't the only person that lived in this building. Someone else could have seen him. What was it he had asked me about on our first date? He had wanted to know if I spoke to my neighbors. I stumbled to the door and rushed downstairs to Teresa's apartment. She answered on the third knock.
"You may not use my phone."
"I don't want to use your phone. I just want to ask you a few quick questions."
"No."
She started to close the door, but I put my hand out to stop her. "I'll be quick. I just want to know if you've seen a tall guy with dark hair around here lately. If he spoke, you might have noticed an accent."
"Your new boyfriend?"
"Yes, I've seen him." She started to close the door again, but this time I put both hands out. "When?"
"Take your hands off my door."
"Just answer the questions and I'll go away."
"For how long?"
"Oh, for God's sake, Teresa." I transferred more of my weight into the struggle. "I don't know.
For at least a month, how about that? You answer my questions, and I won't so much as look at your door for a month.
Until recently, I was able to avoid speaking to you for months at a time.
I was going to kill her, just put my hands around her neck and kill her. But I could wait until she answered the questions. Fine. I won't speak to you for 1 year. If the building catches fire, I promise I won't so much as knock on your door to warn you.
I saw the two of you getting on his motorcycle when I was looking for parking, and then I saw him leaving your apartment Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning? I had been at Dina's Wednesday morning. You saw him leaving my apartment?
I'll answer your questions, but I refuse to repeat myself.
I closed my eyes. It might be easier to get through this if I didn't have to look at her. Did you actually see him coming out the door of my apartment?
No, I bumped into him on the stairs when I was coming back from my morning run.
When was this?
Wednesday morning.
What time?
I don't know.
She tapped her finger against the thin line that constituted her lips.
I usually start my run around 5:15, so it would have been a little after 6. Are we through now?
Yes, yes, we're through. Teresa closed the door, and this time I put my hand on it for balance. I am definitely through. I arrived at PJ's at 8:10. Marcus wasn't there yet, but for some reason Dina and Jason were. Dina waved me over to the table, and I obediently approached.
"Where the hell have you been?" she asked. "I haven't heard from you in ages."
"We talked yesterday." I tried not to stare, but she was wearing an off-the-shoulder top that was displaying two rather large marks on her neck. Maybe Jason was a vampire.
"A day is an eternity when someone is out there trying to kill you."
"You're right. I'll try to..." "You know what? I'm sorry, but shouldn't you be wearing a turtleneck or something?" Dina ran a hand over her neck.
"What, because of the love bites? Why would I want to hide them? They speak to the effectiveness of the products that I sell. In this case, erotic peach-flavored oil. I have some more little bruises on my inner thighs, but they're more difficult to show off."
"That's where you wore the piña colada," Jason said. "I think I liked the erotic peach the best, though."
"Better than the piña colada? Huh. The last guy, my last guy customer, said that he liked piña colada best."
Jason straightened in his chair.
"He tasted it in the store?"
"I'm here to meet Marcus." What the hell, I owed Dina a favor, and changing the subject was easy in this case.
"Really?" Dina said. "Shit, it's been months since I've seen Marcus. You guys should join us."
"Oh, I wouldn't want to interrupt."
"Give me a break. Would I invite you to sit down if you were interrupting?"
I looked over at Jason, who was making a noble attempt to shake off his irritation over Dina's erotic oil-tasting customers. "Jason, you sure that would be okay?" I noted that this was the first time I had seen him wearing normal clothes. Jeans and a white t-shirt. It must be a special occasion.
"Yes, join us."
He managed a smile.
"I've been wanting to talk to you anyway."
I lowered myself into an empty seat. "Okay, you've got me curious now."
"I understand that you suspected me of murdering Barbie and stalking you."
I sat there slack-jawed until I was able to pull it together enough to narrow my eyes at Dina, who was sinking into her chair.
"Hey, there's no need to be embarrassed. You don't know me, and you obviously had to consider all your possibilities. To be honest, I'm flattered."
"You're flattered?" Again I looked over at Dina, who was now barely visible over the tabletop.
"Yeah, it shows that I have an air of mystery about me. That people see me as someone who is on the edge, daring, and just a little dangerous, you know?"
Well, that was almost right. I was sure most people must think of Jason as being on the brink of going over the edge. "Dina tells me you were at a job orientation when Barbie was killed." Now it seemed to be Jason's turn to get smaller.
"Yeah, I was. And I was at my sister's wedding when JJ Money was killed. I've never been to New York, but I plan on going. The vampire scene there is supposed to..."
"What's the new job?" Dina became very absorbed in her beverage while Jason became fascinated with the design of the flatware. "Okay, come on. How embarrassing can it be? Your girlfriend sells gummy penises."
"Yeah. I got a sales job."
"All right. That's a start. Where's the sales job?"
Silence.
"Jason, where's the sales job?"
"Gap."
"Gap?"
He's not selling out. Dina spit an ice cube back into her drink. It's only temporary. So he's temporarily selling out.
I really need dental insurance,
he whispered. Dental insurance? I crossed my arms in front of me and thought about that. Do vampires visit the dentist? Dina! I turned to see Marcus standing behind me. I didn't expect to see you here.
Marcus, darling.
She offered her cheek for his kiss. This is Jason.
Hi, Jason.
Marcus leaned down and studied Dina's neck.
Jason, did you do this?
She was wearing erotic peach oil.
Erotic peach, huh? I always preferred the piña colada.
Oh, you must be the guy customer.
Jason exhaled a sigh of relief, and Dina discreetly signaled for Marcus not to question it. Jason has a thing for necks, I said. He's a vampire.
He also works at Gap.
Really? Marcus gave Jason an approving nod.
How fabulous that they're equal opportunity employers.
So, did you invite Dina and Jason so we could all put our heads together and figure out how to get the goods on Psycho Boy?
Is that why you two are meeting? Asked Dina. To get the goods on Anatoly?
Damn it, Sophie, why didn't you call and tell me?
I cast a sideways glance in Jason's direction.
I've checked every one of his alibis.
She ticked off her points of research on her fingers. I have proof of the date of his sister's wedding, that he was there, and unfortunately he really was at the orientation at Gap.
It wasn't that I still suspected Jason. I just wasn't sure I wanted to share my life with a super freak.
He leaned over and patted my hand.
Nothing will leave this table. I swear on the Vampire Chronicles.
How incredibly reassuring. But time was of the essence, so what the hell? I took a deep breath and went over everything, from my conversation with DC Smooth to my exchange with Teresa.
So there you have it. Anatoly is planning on killing me, the police are convinced that Mark Bacon is the guilty party, I have nothing to convince them otherwise, and I have completely run out of options. We might as well call this what it is, a little impromptu farewell dinner party.
Marcus, I want you to have my CD collection, and Dina, you can have Mr. Katz.
Dina took a sip of her wine.
Marianne can have the cat.
Well, gee, thanks for your sympathy and support.
You know I don't do well with defeatism.
Dina tapped her heel under the table.
We need some more background on Anatoly. You thought he was a contractor. That gallery guy thought he was an insurance salesman. What does Shannon Tolsky think he is?
I don't know. I lowered my head. I didn't think to ask.
Uh-huh. How many murder mysteries have you written?
Marcus shook his head. Okay, it'd be nice to hear what Miss Hollywood has to say about all this, but we're not going to get any evidence that way.
I agree, Jason said. This person has already broken into her place once that we know of. She can't be fucking around doing interviews right now.
Marcus slammed his hand on the table.
That's it!
We all looked at him expectantly.
Don't you people get it? We have to break into his place. That's where the evidence is. That's the only place it would be.
Everyone was speechless for a moment until I found my voice.
No.
Why not?
Because it's a felony, for one, Dina said. And two, we are dealing with a homicidal maniac. Don't you think he might get a little pissed if he finds us in his apartment? It might be safer for Sophie to steal money from the mob and try to make a new life for herself in Brooklyn.
Jason swirled the wine around in his glass.
I don't think anything Sophie does could put her in more danger than she's already in.
But I'm a writer, not a burglar. I wouldn't even know how to break into his place if I wanted to, and I definitely do not want to.
You don't have to. I'll do it, Marcus offered.
Dina grunted.
Great. Have your hairstylist break in. No reason to be concerned about that.
Don't underestimate me. I broke into a few places when I was a teenager trying to be a delinquent so I could distract myself from my Barbra Streisand obsession.
He toyed with one of his locks.
Didn't get caught once.
I shook my head. This won't work.
It could, Jason said. We just need to plan it well.
Dina put her glass back on the table with enough force to cause the wine to slosh over the sides.
Jason, you need to shut up. This is not one of your vampire games. This is Sophie's life. We need to be logical. I am being logical. We'll need two people to break into Anatoly's place.
Marcus shook his head.
One would be more discreet.
But two could search the place in half the time, and time might be a big factor. We'll also need someone to keep Anatoly occupied for a while.
Marcus smiled appreciatively. Good point. Dina, you always pick the smart ones. A little weird, but always very smart.
Dina scoffed. Nothing about this is smart. Tell me, Jason, which one of us do you think should be given the honor of keeping the serial killer occupied?
Both Marcus and Jason looked at me.
Dina practically leaped out of her chair. What the fuck are you people thinking? Maybe you two haven't been listening, so I'm going to repeat a few key facts here, and I'm going to use real simple words so you can both absorb this. Anatoly is trying to kill Sophie. Anatoly is a big, strong guy. Sophie is not. We are not going to set little Sophie up on a date with her big, burly, would-be assailant. That's it. End of story.
We'll have a guard, Jason offered. I'll do it. I'll be her undercover bodyguard. She can meet him in a public place, and I'll be there the whole time.
No.
Dina, maybe they're right. Dina looked like she was about to stab me with her fork, but I continued before she had a chance to attack. I can't live like this anymore. Every moment of every day, I'm wondering if it's my last. This could totally blow up in my face. In fact, there's a good chance of it. But maybe that's a gamble I have to take. You don't have to help me. I looked around the table. None of you has to help me. I guess, if need be, I can break in myself. People a lot less educated than I am do it every day, so how hard can it be, right? Nobody laughed. I rearranged the remaining food on my plate. I have to do something. And this... well, this is definitely something. Marcus smiled and reached over to stroke my hair. It was my idea, honey. Of course I'll help.
And I already said I'd be your guard, said Jason.
Dina inhaled through her gritted teeth.
This is a very bad idea. She studied me for a long time. I met her gaze and waited for her refusal.
Finally, she looked away and slumped back into her chair.
Oh, what the fuck. If we're going to go to prison, we should all go together. It'll be more fun that way.
I threw my arms around her neck. I love you. I do. I turned to Marcus and gave him a hug, too. I have no idea what I've done to deserve you two. And Jason? I released Marcus and smiled at Jason. I don't even know what to say about you. I tried to convince your girlfriend that you were psychotic, and now you're putting everything on the line to help me.
Hey, don't mention it. How can I ever expect to be chosen for immortality if I don't exhibit the willingness to take risks?
I didn't really know what to do with that, so I just kept smiling.
All right, enough of the sentimental bullshit.
Dina picked up the wine bottle and divided its remnants amongst our glasses.
Let's get a game plan together. We have a felony to commit.
Chapter 18. It's amazing how brave a person can be when her life depends on it. Sex, drugs, and murder. I accepted Dina's offer to spend the night at her place, but only after I badgered her into agreeing to take in Mr. Katz as well. For some reason, Mr. Katz wasn't grateful for my protectiveness and expressed his annoyance by peeing in Dina's linen closet, thus ensuring Marianne's inheritance. The three of us somehow managed to set our differences aside long enough to huddle up on the couch and put the first part of the plan into effect. Dina handed me the phone, and I dialed Anatoly's number.
Hello?
I wanted to speak. I really did. But speaking required breathing, and as soon as I heard his voice, my throat constricted, making either activity an impossibility.
Hello? Is anyone there?
Dina slapped me on the back so hard I almost fell off the couch.
Hello, hi, Anatoly, it's me.
Sophie, you got my message?
Yeah, I got it.
I shifted as Dina pressed her ear up against the other side of the receiver.
I'm glad you called. I was hoping we could meet somewhere and talk.
I'd like that.
That was it.
No, why would I want to meet with someone who just recently threatened me with a butcher knife? Just, I'd like that.
Dina shook her head. If either of us had any doubts about his guilt, they had just flown out the window.
Do you want to meet now?
What? No! I grabbed Dina's arm. Anatoly, it's late, and I've had a long day, but...
But maybe tomorrow? Tomorrow night's fine. What time?
Dina and I simultaneously exhaled.
Well, I have dinner plans with family tomorrow, but we could meet afterward, like at 10:30 at Baja Cantina?
It's just after 10:30 now, and you said it was too late.
I said it's been a long day.
Besides, if there's ever a time that I can count on needing a drink, it's after dinner with my family.
So, what do you say?
10:30's fine. Shall I pick you up?
No, I'm not sure if I'll be stopping home after dinner. It's better to meet there.
Your call. I'll see you at Baja Cantina tomorrow at 10:30.
Can't wait. Bye.
I hung up and looked at Dina.
Alrighty then. I'm going to die.
She slipped her arm over my shoulders and gave me a hearty shake.
Hey, what's to worry about? You have the dream team on your side. A hairstylist, the city's leading expert on sex toys, and a chino-wearing vampire. We're all set.
If I had drunk an entire pot of coffee, I couldn't have been more jittery. I wasn't able to sleep, so I attempted to be productive. I didn't have Shannon's home number, but I tried Margaret Tolsky instead. I called her home at midnight, and at 1 and 2 in the morning, to no avail. I tried reading a book, but I couldn't focus. Finally, I raided Dina's medicine cabinet and found the NyQuil. 8 hours later, I woke up to Marianne standing over me.
What's going on?
Marianne,
don't tell her anything.
Dina rushed in and hovered over Marianne.
What are you doing here anyway? Don't you have some socialites to make over or something?
Marianne didn't even look at Dina.
I know something's going on. It's 11 a.m. Dina was supposed to open this morning, and she had a salesperson come in instead. She never calls in unless she's sick with the plague.
I propped myself up on my elbow.
I don't think you can be sick with the plague.
She's not sick at all. She won't tell me what's going on, so you need to. Did something else happen?
Dina stepped between us so that Marianne was forced to acknowledge her.
Nothing else happened. Sophie, understandably, didn't feel comfortable being alone in her apartment, so she came here. I offered to stay with her today because I thought she could use a friend. That's it. End of story. You can go home now.
Marianne sat on the corner of the daybed.
Well, if Sophie needs one friend, I'm sure she could use two. Right, Sophie?
I looked quickly from Dina to Marianne. Actually, Dina and I haven't had a lot of one-on-one time lately, so...
Lucy, I'm home!
Marcus's voice sang from the entryway.
Where is everybody?
He peeked in the room.
Marianne! Long time no kibitz. Are you joining our lovely little band of future felons? Might be a bagel in it for you.
He held out a brown bag from Noah's.
God fucking damn it, Marcus.
Dina curled her hands up into two fists.
Do you even know how to spell discretion?
Marcus glanced again at Marianne and winced.
D-I-S-K-R-E-T-I-O-N?
How about you're an I-D-I-O-T?
I don't get it. How are you a band of would-be felons?
Marianne jumped up.
You're planning something. You're planning something illegal.
Marcus smiled.
I'd forgotten how quick you were. Marcus, shut up, Dina snapped. Marianne, it's not what you think. We're just gonna bake a batch of pot brownies, that's all. We've all been a little stressed lately, and we thought we'd take an afternoon off and smoke our troubles away. I didn't call you because I knew you wouldn't approve.
Marianne narrowed her eyes.
But pot's legal in California.
No, it's not, Dina countered. Not really.
Well, it kind of is. Marcus rubbed his hand over a carefully cultivated stubble. At least, I think it is for some people. You know, I keep getting confused.
Hello! I waved my hand in the air to get everyone's attention. She's not buying it.
I looked at Marianne. Are you?
No,
Marianne said definitively.
I know you want to protect her. I pulled my hair away from my face, which probably wasn't such a good idea since it would just make it easier for Dina if she decided to scratch out my eyes.
I really think we need to tell her at this point. Marianne can keep a secret, and it's not like we're asking her to help out.
Tell me what?
Dina turned around and walked out of the room, leaving my eyes intact. Marcus followed wordlessly, head lowered and bagels held high as an offering. "Sit down." I patted the spot Marianne had just vacated. "And I'll tell you about the little game of Russian roulette we have planned for this evening." Marianne absorbed all the information I gave her with only a few questions, none of them exceedingly stupid. When I was done, she sat there quietly, stroking my cat who had planted himself on her lap. Finally, she peered up at me and smiled.
"I want to help."
"No," Dina screamed from the kitchen. I had forgotten about her bat-like hearing ability. Marianne went out to confront Dina, and I tiptoed after her.
"You need me."
"The hell we do," Dina replied. Marianne picked up a cinnamon raisin bagel and started applying the schmear.
"You need a lookout person."
"No, we don't. Sophie's going to be the decoy and Jason's the bodyguard. If they're unable to detain Anatoly, one of them will call us on my cell phone. No lookout person needed."
"What about the other people in the building?"
"What about them?" Marcus asked between bagel bites.
"Well, it would be bad if one of them saw you coming out of Anatoly's apartment, wouldn't it? I mean, wouldn't it be helpful if someone was parked across the street? Someone who could tell you the coast is clear or help you make a quick escape if necessary?"
Dina looked up at the ceiling. "You have to choose now to start making sense." I crossed the room and pushed Marcus out of the way so I could embrace the automatic coffee maker. "You know, if she wants to help, why not let her? If something goes wrong, she'll be in the best position to make the necessary calls for help, and she'll be able to get away easily."
"She's a makeup artist, for Christ's sake."
"And you're a sex shop owner. And you're both adults capable of making your own decisions." Dina shook her head.
"This is bad. This is very, very bad."
But she didn't make any more protests. I inhaled my coffee.
"Did you stake the place out?"
"Mm-hmm," replied Marcus. "It was just like Dragnet. There's a window on the side of his building that he kept open even after he went out this morning. I think I can use the molding to climb up to it. Then I'll just buzz Dina in."
"I can't believe we're doing this."
Dina was still glaring at Marianne.
"Oh, come on, Dina, sweetie. It'll be fun."
Marcus grasped both her hands and held her at arm's distance.
"We can put on some tight little black outfits and pretend we're the new Bonnie and Clyde."
Dina fought a smile.
"You look nothing like Warren Beatty."
"You got that right, girlfriend. Warren would kill for my cheekbones."
At 10 o'clock, I was sitting in my apartment chewing off my fingernails with Dina and Marcus at my side. Jason was already at the Baja Cantina, and Marianne was in her car in her hard-won parking spot across from Anatoly's building. I had positioned myself adjacent to the phone so that I could pick up the second she called. I had spent the day pacing, doing jumping jacks, and calling Shannon and Margaret Tolsky, each of whom had been perpetually inaccessible. But now none of us seemed to be able to do anything but wait. When Jason had checked in earlier, I had noted that he was the only one who seemed more excited than terrified. But then, Jason lived in a different reality from the rest of us. When the phone rang, we all jumped.
"Who is it?" Dina asked.
"I don't know. I haven't answered it yet."
"When the fuck are you going to stop living in the Middle Ages and get caller ID?" Dina chided.
"Sophie, honey," Marcus interrupted. "Pick up the phone."
Hello?
"Sophie, why haven't you called me back? And don't tell me you didn't get my message, because I know you did."
"Leah," I looked over at Dina, who put her head in her hands. "You know, this isn't really a good time."
"Oh, really? Well, when would be a good time for me to tell you that Bob is cheating on me?"
"Bob is cheating on you?" Marcus sat up and clapped his hands.
Oh, family dirt. Love it."
I motioned for Marcus to shut up. "Leah..." The phone beeped. "Leah, I have another call coming in. I've got to get that." I clicked over before she had time to protest.
"Sophie, it's me. Anatoly's getting on his motorcycle right now. He's starting the engine." "Okay, he's gone."
"And so are we. Call Jason and tell him we're on our way." I clicked back over to Leah.
"I can't believe you just did that. I tell you that my husband is having an affair."
"Leah, I'm sorry. I really am. And I want to talk to you about this, but now's not a good time."
"What?"
"Just don't file for divorce in the next 12 hours or so, and I'll call tomorrow. Promise."
"Sophie."
I hung up. "Anatoly just left, and my sister hates me."
"She'll get over it," Dina said.
We all got to our feet and quickly collected our cell phones. I watched as Dina and Marcus pulled on their leather gloves. Please be careful, you guys.
I'll protect Marcus. You just keep your own ass safe.
We said our farewells, and I jogged over to my car. Dina and Marcus made their way to Anatoly's. It took 10 minutes to get to Fillmore Street, and 15 minutes for a space to open up on the same block that Jason had parked on. I entered the bar and looked around. Jason was at the bar and gave me a practically imperceptible nod. Anatoly was at a table. I took in one last gulp of air, which I knew I wouldn't be exhaling for a few hours. Anatoly made eye contact. I smiled, did a little Miss America wave, and walked to his side. I see you already ordered me a drink. I pulled myself onto the stool next to him.
I remembered that you liked Bloody Marys.
He gently pushed the drink over to me. His eyes slowly went over my figure in a way that sent chills up my spine, and not chills of fear, either. This was bad. I was not in the habit of being attracted to psycho serial killers. I did not want to be a candidate for the Jerry Springer show.
Well, I'm glad you did. We need to talk, and for this talk, it's helpful to have a drink.
Oh?
Yeah.
I ran a flirtatious finger around the rim of my glass.
I owe you an apology, you know, for the other day.
You must be referring to the day that you seduced me, lured me to the bedroom, and then threatened me with a butcher knife. Am I to take it that my foreplay needs some work?
I smiled.
No, no, your foreplay, at least from my limited observation, is just fine.
The problem lay with me.
Go on.
Okay. I lifted my glass, then put it down without tasting its contents. Earlier that afternoon, an acquaintance of mine was murdered.
Barbie Vega. I read about it in the paper. You're the one who found the body, right?
Yes, I found her. I picked up my drink again and this time brought it to my lips. I felt the spices burn my tongue, but that was all I allowed myself. Sobriety was important tonight.
You didn't mention that when I saw you.
No, I bit into my lip. I didn't want to think about it.
That would be a tough one to forget.
Yeah, it is.
Anatoly put his forearms on the table.
So, why did you pull the knife on me?
Here was where I was going to have to be my most convincing. I pulled a knife on you because I thought that you might be the one who killed Barbie. Anatoly sat motionless. I tried to read his expression, but it was impossible.
Don't get me wrong, I know that's ridiculous now, I said. Mark Bacon killed Barbie.
But at the time I was disoriented and distraught. As you may remember, when I first met up with you, I punched you in the jaw.
I remember.
Well, I just got this crazy idea that you were Barbie's killer and you were there to kill me. I leaned forward and placed my hand an inch away from where his rested, an act I hoped would convey a renewed trust. It was based on no facts whatsoever, just my own bizarre hysteria. Anatoly took a long sip of his beer. I'm sorry. My eyes unwillingly traveled over to Jason before I quickly returned them to the table.
As you can see, I have no good excuse, but do you think you could forgive me anyway?
Anatoly stared at me for what felt like an eternity. Then a smile crept onto his mouth.
Of course I can forgive you. If I had a dime for every time a woman threatened me with a kitchen knife, you'd be rich by now? I don't know about rich, but at least I'd have 10 cents.
I giggled and took a small sip of my drink. Well, I try to be original. Anatoly's hand covered my knee under the table. I tried not to recoil. Fortunately, my cell rang, which gave me the excuse to shift my weight away from him while I answered it.
Hey, it's me, we're in, Dina said.
Hi, you.
The window was open a crack, just like Marcus predicted, so getting in was a cinch.
Uh-huh, great. Anything else? Dina calling me to describe the break-in was not only unnecessary, it was reckless.
No, that's not it. We found something.
I glanced quickly up at Anatoly.
Oh, really? What?
Pictures, Sophie. Photos of you, along with pretty much every book review and newspaper clipping that has ever mentioned your name. But Sophie, it's the pictures. There are photos of you having coffee, talking to Marcus, talking with me and Marianne, having lunch with your sister and nephew. The guy's obsessed.
My heart fell to the bottom of my stomach.
my friends and family. What if he had tried something when I was with Jack?
Sophie? Sophie, are you still there?
Yeah. Look, it sounds like you're on the right track. So why don't you just keep doing what you're doing and we'll talk later?
Got it. Be careful, Sophie.
That was my sister. I put the phone back into my purse. She thinks her husband is cheating on her and she's going through a kind of crisis right now. Funny how you could lie and tell the truth at the same time.
Must be tough, he said as he tried to get the attention of our cocktail waitress.
They have a kid.
Like I said, must be tough.
She should hire a private investigator to make sure she's right before she does anything. That's a little dramatic, don't you think? Anatoly shrugged.
People do it all the time.
Well, I don't think that's her style. I don't expect her to call again, but I'm going to keep my cell phone on just in case I have to talk her down from a window ledge or something.
Do you really think she'd kill herself over this?
No, I was just making a bad joke. Anatoly lifted his eyebrows.
Considering recent events, I would think you would be afraid of jinxing yourself.
Had he just threatened my sister? The waitress came over and Anatoly ordered another beer. He eyed my drink.
Is there something wrong with your Bloody Mary?
No. I took another small sip. I just didn't eat much today, so I'm taking it slow.
I thought you just came from dinner at your parents'.
I did. I just didn't like the food. Could I be more inept?
You'll look beautiful tonight.
Anatoly reached over and put a gentle hand under my chin, lifting it ever so slightly.
Perhaps I'll skip my drink as well, and we can go somewhere more private.
No! Anatoly started. I swallowed and tried to make my voice smoother.
I mean, you just ordered your drink, and I do plan on drinking this eventually. Can't let a good Bloody Mary go to waste. That's sacrilegious.
The cocktail waitress placed the beer in front of Anatoly, and he drank half of it in one swig.
I would hate for you to be sacrilegious.
He then lifted my drink and held it in front of me.
L'chaim.
He pressed the glass against my lips and slowly tipped it forward. If the acoustics in the room were better, he would have been able to hear my heart pounding. My cell phone rang again, and Anatoly put the glass down while I snatched the phone out of my purse.
Hello? Sophie? It's Marcus. Get out of there. Get as far away from him as humanly possible.
Why?
I found the hatchet. It was duct taped to the underside of his bed. Sophie, it still has blood stains on it.
I looked up at Anatoly. He was smiling at me and wiping off the drops of the red liquid that had spilled onto his fingers. Chapter 19.
Alicia knew that if she wanted to live, she would have to face the man who coveted her death. Sex, drugs, and murder.
Sophie, did you hear me? Marcus asked. You need to get your ass out of there.
I heard you. I smoothed a wrinkled cocktail napkin.
You know I'm always here for you, Leah.
Just give me a few minutes and I'll head on over.
Where shall we meet? The police station?
No, why don't you meet me out by the car? That way I won't have to worry about waking Jack.
You want Dina and me to wait in Marianne's car until you have a chance to talk more freely?
Exactly.
Should I take the hatchet?
No, I rolled my eyes for Anatoly's benefit.
Don't do anything. Just wait for me.
Okay, but hurry, Sophie. It's a bad idea to hang out at the scene of a crime, and it's an even worse idea to hang out with a murderer.
Right. Well, see you in a bit.
You are an extraordinarily dedicated sister, Anatoly said.
What? My voice sounded small to me. Everything seemed small except Anatoly, who had become enormous.
Are you really going to rush out and comfort her right now?
I was seeing him for the first time. He was human.
I have to go to her. She's my sister, and her life...
He had killed J.J. Money and allowed an innocent man to go to prison for it. He had killed his mentor. He had killed a woman with a hatchet, and then come back to my apartment to seduce me and had not even been shaken or rattled.
Her life's a mess right now.
He had been calm and charming. She needs me. Perfectly charming.
He scrutinized me over his beer.
Are you all right?
You look pale. He gently lifted my hand. You're shaking. I just didn't expect this. I thought that she and Bob were really going to make it, that theirs was the real thing. But it wasn't. It was an illusion, a lie, and now everything's falling apart. He squeezed my hand.
Things and people aren't always as they seem. It's a hard lesson to learn, but one that is taught over and over again.
I pulled my hand away. I have to make a stop in the ladies' room.
All right. I'll settle the tab.
He was acting concerned, but there was a note of suspicion in his voice as well. I had to pull it together before I gave everything away. I tucked my phone back into my purse. I'll be right back. I brushed past Jason just as he was hanging up his cell phone. There was a thin layer of sweat covering his features. So it had finally become real to him. I knew that before this he hadn't truly believed that Anatoly was a cold-blooded killer any more than he believed he was going to become a vampire. He clung to the fantasy the way most children clung to the idea of the Easter Bunny. They would swear to its existence, but if they ever met a real 6-foot, smiling, egg-throwing rabbit, they would run for their lives. I suspected that's what Jason wanted to do right now. There were a few women already in the bathroom fixing their makeup. I stood behind them and stared at my reflection. I wasn't supposed to be there. None of this was supposed to be happening. I should be having drinks with Dina, working on my next book. I wasn't supposed to be fighting for my life. One of the women assumed I was waiting for a space by the mirror and cleared out. I took a step closer and pretended to look for a lipstick. I needed to call the police. I watched as the other woman walked out. There was a very big problem. I couldn't tell the police what I knew without admitting to them that my friends and I had broken into his apartment. That would not only get all of us in some boiling water, but it would leave room for the possibility that we had planted the hatchet. I looked back up at the mirror. The room had taken on a surreal, nightmare-like quality. How could none of us have thought of that? I was in exactly the same position I'd been in before the evening began. My cell phone rang again. This time, it was Jason.
What the fuck are you doing in there? We have to get the hell out of here.
I'm going to invite him to my place for a drink.
What?
Marcus has a key to my apartment. Call him and tell him to go up there right now and hide. The bathroom, behind the shower curtain, would be perfect. Tell him to bring the phone in there with him. He is in no way to make himself known to Anatoly. I'll find him when it's time.
Are you mental? Time for what?
Just tell him, Jason.
I can't believe... Gotta go.
The line went dead. I replaced the phone and dragged my lipstick across my lips.
This is it, I whispered. The game ends tonight. That fucker's going down.
I made an attempt at fixing my hair before rejoining Anatoly. I was just on the phone with my sister again. I changed my mind. I'll deal with her tomorrow. Tonight, I want to spend with you.
Oh?
His eyes fell to my newly painted lips.
Do you want another drink then?
No, this place is way too packed. Let's go somewhere a little more intimate.
I'm open to suggestions.
I reached up and lightly caressed his shoulder.
My place can be intimate.
Anatoly's eyes slanted.
You want to bring me up to your place?
Mm-hmm. Don't worry. I haven't sharpened the kitchen knives in ages.
Good to know.
So, is that a yes? Or are you scared? He cocked his head to the left. I think I can handle myself. Good. I dipped my finger into my Bloody Mary and sucked the liquid off.
Did you bring your bike?
Yes. Then parking will only be a problem for one of us. Why don't you follow me? That way you won't have to wait in front of my place while I look for a spot.
All right.
Anatoly stood up and started to put on his leather jacket.
By the way, if you were worried about that crazy man who's been staring at you all night, I used the time that you were in the bathroom to speak with him.
I dropped my keys. Anatoly retrieved them for me.
What crazy man? The one who felt the need to share his colorful views on art during Bellardi's opening at Sussman Gallery.
Didn't you notice him? I thought I saw you looking at him earlier. I didn't trust myself to speak, so I just shook my head. Anatoly took me by the shoulders and turned me around so that I was facing Jason's direction. Maybe a vampire had found him, because all of his coloring was gone. He didn't look up. He just sat there studying the bubbles in his beer. I tried to relax underneath his grip.
He looks a little like him, but I don't think he's the same guy. The other guy was skinnier.
That's him. He's been talking on his cell phone all night. Kind of like you. I tried to laugh, but it came out as more of a gasp for air.
What did you say to him?
I told him that it would be very unwise of him to be following you, if that was what he was doing. He claims that he's here waiting for a friend who's running late. The way he's been looking at me makes me think otherwise, but it doesn't matter. I don't think he'll give you any problems. He doesn't have the same bravado this evening.
Well, he's probably just embarrassed that you remembered him. God only knows what he was on that night.
I linked my arm with his.
Come on, we have better things to do than stand around here talking about that freak.
I led Anatoly out of the bar. Jason didn't follow.
My bike's right here. Would you like a ride to your car?
No, I think I'll walk. I need the fresh air.
You'll get plenty of fresh air on the bike.
I patted my hair. I just fixed myself up. Besides, I parked pretty close. Just get yourself situated and I'll be by in a minute. Anatoly pulled some gloves out of his helmet.
You're the boss.
God, I hope that was true. For this to work, I had to be the one in control from start to finish. I started to walk away, but Anatoly grabbed my arm and pulled me in for a deep kiss.
Have I told you how beautiful you look tonight?
Yeah, but it never hurts to be reminded. I cautiously removed my arm. There will be plenty of time for that at my place. When I got to my car, I placed a quick call to Marcus to verify that he had gotten the new instructions. Apparently he had, because the instant he picked up, he started screaming at me about my state of mind. I quickly repeated what I had said to Jason and turned my phone off before he could argue further. No one was going to talk me out of this. Not now. As I passed Baja Cantina, I saw Anatoly pull in behind me. There was no longer even a choice. Near my place, I found parking and walked him up to the apartment. I opened the door for him and he slid past me into the living room. My eyes immediately went to the base of the cordless phone. The receiver was missing. Obviously, Marcus had done as I asked and was in the bathroom with the phone. I smiled and took a step closer to Anatoly.
Thanks for giving me another chance.
No problem. I didn't let him finish. I laced my hands behind his head and pulled him down to me. The kiss lasted for what felt like a year before he finally came up for air.
You're all business tonight.
That's right. I leaned in and grazed the nape of his neck with my teeth. All business.
This is a side of you I haven't seen before. You're much more aggressive.
We've been close to this on a few different occasions. I was now nibbling his ear. I haven't been with someone in over 2 years. I'm not interested in setting any new world records.
God forbid.
He kissed me again. This time his tongue explored the regions of my mouth while his hand slid down my back. Then lower. Let's go into the bedroom. I took his hand and showed him the way, casting a quick glance at the partially open door of the bathroom as we passed. We were at the foot of my bed now. Somehow I managed to take a moment to turn on the radio. Anatoly's kisses were growing increasingly passionate. He used one of his hands to hold me in place while the other went to my inner thigh.
Wait, I whispered.
But Anatoly didn't stop.
Wasn't it you that said we've let this moment come and go too many times? No more waiting. I want you now.
I tried to push away from his chest.
I want you too, but we have to use protection.
Without missing a beat, Anatoly reached into his back pocket.
Got it.
I shook my head at a speed that should have given me whiplash.
I hate condoms, I lied. I have a diaphragm in the bathroom. Give me just a moment.
Anatoly hesitated.
I suppose if you prefer,
I do. I disentangled myself, then gave him a final gentle kiss on the collarbone. It will only take a minute.
Don't move a muscle.
Anatoly's expression betrayed some kind of inner battle, but he didn't stop me from leaving the room. I closed the bathroom door and pulled back the shower curtain. Marcus was standing there holding the phone like it was a loaded gun.
What the fuck do you think you are doing?
He asked in a low whisper. I took a step forward.
Hit me.
Marcus just stared at me. Don't question it, just do it. Give me a black eye now, and then go out the bathroom window. You scaled up Anatoly's two-story building, you can scale down my three-story one.
My God, you have finally lost your mind.
Do it now, or he may kill us both. Marcus's expression had changed from one of anger to one of bewilderment.
Sophie, are you coming? Anatoly's voice traveled through the door.
I'll be right there. Why don't you turn the bed down?
Your wish is my command.
I exhaled and started to turn back to Marcus when I felt the back of his hand land heavily against my cheek. I suppressed a cry of pain and surprise as I staggered backward. Marcus caught me before I lost balance. His left hand went to my injured eye.
Sophie, go.
I pointed toward the window. Tell the others to go home and not to call. Tell them my life depends on it.
But...
I pointed to the window again. Marcus shook his head and handed me the phone. He caressed my hair one last time, then climbed out the window. I dialed the three numbers.
911 emergency.
Please help me, I whispered. He's going to kill me. I then pressed the mute button. They had all the information I wanted to give them for now, and I certainly didn't want them to hear anything that would expose this for being the setup that it was. I covered the earpiece with my hand so Anatoly wouldn't be able to hear the dispatcher's questions. I exited the bathroom, leaving the light on and quietly closing the door behind me. I tiptoed to the kitchen and tossed the phone out onto the fire escape. They would have plenty of time to trace the call. I put my hands on either side of my neckline and tore my shirt open. Buttons flew everywhere. I heard Anatoly knock on the bathroom door and then the creak of the door opening.
I'm in the kitchen, I called out, getting us some champagne.
I climbed on top of a chair and pulled down an empty wine bottle that had been waiting to be recycled. Holding it, I leaned against the counter and counted the seconds until he found me. 7 seconds exactly.
Sophie, what are you doing?
Before he could react, I kicked the kitchen stool over and smashed the wine bottle against the counter so that I was in possession of a jagged-edged weapon. I backed up against the window.
I know who you are, you son of a bitch, and I know what you've done.
Anatoly stood there in silence for a beat. Then he slowly reached down to his ankle and pulled a gun out of a hidden holster. I dropped the bottle.
What the fuck did you do to your shirt and face?
Please. Please, don't do this. Don't kill me. Tears were forming in my swollen eye. How much time would it take the police to get here? A minute? 5?
You stupid...
I'm not going to... The front door flew open and 2 uniformed police officers burst in, their voices shouting out their identity. I heard the gunshot and fell to my knees. I saw blood on the floor but wasn't immediately sure of where it was coming from. It wasn't until I saw Anatoly clutching his wounded arm and the police apprehending him that I understood what had happened. A 3rd police officer came in and started asking me questions, but I couldn't understand what he was saying. The room was spinning at a breakneck pace. I leaned over and threw up. So once again I was answering questions for the police into the wee hours of the night. I told them everything, although I did allow a little poetic license over the evening's events. I told them that I had been suspicious of Anatoly for some time. I told them about the crimes I thought he had committed, and the facts that had led me to believe he had opportunity. I also told them that Anatoly had asked to meet me for drinks and had convinced me that my fears were unfounded. I relented and invited him up to my apartment. But then he got too aggressive for my taste, and that's when things got out of control. He hit me. I managed to call the police and then threw the phone out the window so that he wouldn't be able to hang it up before they could trace the call. I must have inadvertently pressed the mute button. He tried to grab me, but only succeeded in ripping my shirt. I tried to defend myself with a broken bottle, and it was then that he pulled the gun on me. Okay, so I took a lot of poetic license, and I completely forgot to tell them about Dina's and Marcus's roles in the whole thing. But they got the important part. Anatoly pulled a gun on me and tried to kill me. I declined the detective's suggestions to visit a hospital for my injury, although I did allow them to take pictures of it and my ripped shirt. When I was done at the station, I went back to my apartment, collected Mr. Katz, who had been bravely guarding the dust bunnies under the coffee table during the whole ordeal, and left so that the police could collect evidence and dust for prints. It wouldn't be long before they would be searching Anatoly's place as well. I called Dina from my cell phone and asked if I could crash at her place. I had never heard her so beside herself. Within 15 minutes she was there to pick me up. I put Mr. Katzen back and climbed into the front seat.
"Where the fuck is your head?" she was screaming as she drove toward Noe Valley. "There are risks, and then there's pure stupidity. What if he had raped you? What if he had shot you before the police got there? Did you even consider those possibilities?"
I didn't have that luxury. I had to stop him, and this was the only way.
"Oh, fuck that. We could have come up with something else. Anything would have been better than that."
"It worked, didn't it?" I asked. I turned and smiled at my annoyed pet, who was loudly protesting through the bars of his cat carrier.
"Only because you were insanely lucky." "Jesus, Sophie, when Marcus told me what you were up to, I almost had a heart attack and died." "Died, Sophie. I haven't even hit my sexual peak yet."
God help us all when that happens. I gazed at the rows of houses through the thin layer of dust that had settled on the side windows. "You know what's weird?"
"You taking cavalier chances with your life?"
Dina was changing gears with the force of a race car driver. "Anatoly pulled a handgun on me."
"Yeah, well, that part actually makes sense, considering he was trying to kill you."
"None of the characters in my book was killed with a handgun. Someone in my first book was shot with a hunting rifle, and in my third book a woman was shot with a sawed-off shotgun, but no one was ever killed or even threatened with a handgun." I adjusted my position so I could take in Dina's profile. Anatoly varied from the script.
"I guess seeing you dead was more important to him than recreating one of your novels."
Her little Toyota groaned in protest as she tried to make it do 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. "Yeah, but that was his whole M.O., killing people in the manner they described in their entertainment medium."
"Sophie, you're not going to get this to make sense. The guy is crazy, and I mean Ted Bundy kind of crazy. Logic and consistency means nothing to people like that."
"I guess you're right." I closed my eyes to the blurred lights of the city. "Besides, I'm tired of trying to figure this all out. By tomorrow afternoon, the police will have found the hatchet in his apartment, and this will all be over. That's all I really care about now."
"Amen, sister."
The next day, I was called into the police station and greeted by Detective Lorenzo, who was cordial, if not downright friendly. The first part of the conversation went as I had anticipated. He offered some evasive apologies for not taking me seriously before, enough to partially pacify me, but not enough to get him sued. He politely inquired about my eye and if I had slept well. Then the subject of Anatoly came up.
"We found the murder weapon used in the Barbie Vega case in Dorinsky's apartment. He's now being charged with that murder, along with the attack he made on you."
I sniffed at the coffee-like substance that had been offered to me. "Well, I guess you finally have your evidence, then."
"Hmm."
He took a large gulp from his cup. He seemed to gain an enjoyment from the beverage that, as far as I could tell, was completely unjustified. It wasn't Starbucks.
"We are checking into the possibility that he was involved in Tolsky's and J.J. Money's deaths, but so far we don't have any solid links."
"You have to find something." I scooted forward in my chair. "D.C. Smooth is in jail for one of those murders. You can't let an innocent man take the rap for Anatoly." Lorenzo put his hand up to stop me.
"Don't worry. If Dorinsky is the responsible party in that murder, he's the one who will do the time for it, assuming, of course, that he doesn't get the death penalty, which is a real possibility here."
I nodded and felt the beginnings of a migraine take up residence in my skull. I was not actively opposed to the death penalty, but the inescapable visual of Anatoly losing his life at the hands of a death row correctional officer was more than a little unsettling. I sipped from my paper cup, then pressed my lips together so I could suppress the impulse to spit it out.
"I have to say, I never would have expected any of this from this guy. He's had a few minor scuffs with the law in the past, but nothing major, and he has a history of being a pretty good PI. I would have pegged him as one of the good guys."
I wrinkled my forehead. "PI?"
"Yep, that's his real occupation. He started as an investigator for an insurance firm, and then switched over to representing private citizens a few years ago. Get this, the last person to have hired him was Shannon Tolsky."
I spilled my coffee down my shirt. "But I talked to Shannon. We even talked a little about Anatoly. She never mentioned that."
"She says he told her to keep his employment a secret. A few weeks after taking on the assignment, she fired him. Didn't think he was making enough progress. I'd say there's not a lot of love lost between those two.
She was more than willing to embrace the possibility that Dorinsky is responsible for killing her dad.
So, he's claiming he's been investigating the Tolsky murder?
Uh-huh. He says that after Miss Tolsky fired him, he continued the investigation on his own. He claims he had reason to believe that Tolsky was having an affair with a woman in the city, and he thought that she might somehow be involved in his death. He says he thinks that woman was you.
Me? I lurched forward, spilling more of my drink. This was getting too weird.
You. In fact, he's clinging to the story that you set him up, that you staged your own attack. But that's a little far-fetched for us. After all, you couldn't very well have punched yourself in the face, could you?
I sat back in my seat. No, that would be difficult.
Plus, by Dorinsky's own admission, you've never been up to his place, and there doesn't seem to have been any opportunity for you to have planted that hatchet in the kitchen. So there goes that theory.
The hatchet had been in the bedroom. I recognized the trap. It was the fact that Lorenzo felt the need to set it that worried me. What would it take to get this man to believe in my innocence? I forced myself to drink what remained in my cup. I can't believe he has the audacity to make up accusations about me. But I guess people will do whatever they feel is necessary to save their own skin. Lorenzo offered a tight smile.
That they will. They'll need your testimony to get a conviction. I trust you'll be a cooperative witness?
Absolutely.
Then I'll see you in court.
Lorenzo stood up to indicate that the meeting was over. I followed suit, smoothing my skirt before reaching out to shake his hand. Thank you for taking care of this. It'll be nice to be able to sleep peacefully again. He grinned and walked me to the door.
Just don't invite any more men up to your apartment that you suspect of murder, okay?
Chapter 20.
I swear, Kitty said with a bored sigh, if I have to go to one more S&M party, I'll scream.
Sex, drugs, and murder. I went back to my place where I had dropped Mr. Katz off earlier. I bent down and scratched him behind the ears. It's just you and me again, buddy. He tolerated my affections for a few minutes before going back to his food bowl. I went over and checked the answering machine. 18 messages. I skipped through the first 5 from reporters before I got to Leah. She couldn't believe that I would put off talking to her about her marriage in order to have drinks with a psychotic. There were 3 messages from my mother. Millions of nice Jewish boys out there, and you had to take up with Bugsy Siegel. Did I raise you for this? Another 8 from the press, and then there was one from Marcus. Hi, honey. I think a little celebration is in order. Let's do dinner at my place tonight. Jason's working, but Donato, Marianne, and Dina can all make it. We'll drink, drink, and drink some more until the whole thing's funny. Shall we say 7:30? Call me at the salon to confirm. I dialed up Ulala to accept the invitation and to tell him about the information I had gotten at the police station. A private dick, huh? I've always wanted one of those. It's not funny, Marcus. In fact, it's really weird. Why, because you thought all PIs were good guys? There are corrupt cops, so there have got to be a few bad boy PIs out there. I guess. I looked over to the spot where he had held me at gunpoint. But we're not talking about corrupt. We're talking about nuts. I mean, what's the motive here? You're not having second thoughts about his guilt, are you, honey? He's been sleeping on a bloody hatchet. Yeah, I know. I stretched my legs out in front of me. Obviously he's guilty. I guess I would just like it if it was wrapped up a little more neatly. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find... Goodbye, Marcus. I'll see you at 7:30. Ciao, Bella. I called my mother and spent 25 minutes reassuring her before I finally cut her off with some excuse about having an appointment at the police station. I half-walked, half-crawled to my beckoning sofa. Mr. Katz jumped up on my stomach and curled into a little fur pillow. I smiled and rested my hand on his back. So what do you say, sweetie? Are you up for a 4-hour catnap? At 7:30 sharp, I arrived at Marcus's. It was Donato who answered the door. Ah, it's our heroine. I laughed and scooted into the apartment. I don't know if I qualify as a heroine. Maybe just a private citizen who isn't afraid to take stupid chances.
Do not minimize what you have done. You have proven yourself to be an exceptionally brave woman.
Gorgeous and charming.
If he was straight, I would have jumped him right then. Thank you. But really, it was a case of being forced to rise to the occasion. Where is everyone?
Marianne and Dina are going to be 15 minutes late. Marcus is at the store, purchasing more wine.
More wine, huh? I removed my jacket and hooked it on the coat rack. If I didn't know any better, I'd say he was trying to get me drunk in order to have his way with me. Unfortunately, I do know better. I started to hang up my purse, but my cell phone started doing its Frère Jacques thing. Hello?
This is Mrs. Tolsky. I want you to stop calling me.
Oh, gosh, you caught me a little off guard.
You don't have to worry. Both you and that Anatoly person. I spoke to Shannon, and I know exactly what information you want, and I'm going to give it to you now. But in exchange, you both must stop harassing me immediately.
Actually, what I was about to say...
My husband was having an affair with someone in San Francisco, she continued, but much to my humiliation and complete disgust, it was not with a woman, but with a man. I took in a sharp breath.
Excuse me?
You heard me. I received a video in the mail, without a return address or a note. I can't tell you how disgusting it was. Alex swore that he didn't know he was being taped, but that's not really the point now, is it?
No, I guess not.
The other man in the video, if you can call people who do those things men, was tan with dark hair. Latin, I suppose. That's all I know. I certainly didn't spend any time studying it for distinguishing characteristics. Of course, I destroyed the tape.
I started surveying the room. A table set for five, a fresh bouquet in a crystal vase, a CD tower.
I would appreciate you not leaking any of this to the media.
A Japanese screen, an entertainment center.
But at the moment, that's not really my main concern. Just stop calling me.
A new set of golf clubs.
I ducked just as the putter was swung over my head. I whirled around and grabbed the other end of the club.
Donato yanked it to the left with enough force to pull me off my feet. But I didn't let go. His boot went into my stomach, and I gasped in pain. I still had the end of the club, but I wouldn't be able to hold on much longer. I pulled the putter as hard as I could, prompting Donato to do the same. Then I let go. He fell backward, and the club went flying through the closed window. I turned to run, but he had my leg, and I came crashing down. He was straddling me now. I tried to evade his grasp, but it was no good. My arms were pulled behind my back. I heard Marcus's phone come crashing to the ground and then felt the plastic of the cord dig into the skin around my wrists. I screamed and cried for help. He flipped me over and stuffed a silk scarf into my mouth until I gagged.
You have a choice about how you are to die, Donato instructed. I can inflict minimum or maximum pain. I would prefer minimum. Please nod your head if you agree.
The feelings of panic I had experienced when Andy had attacked me, when I found Barbie, when Marcus had discovered the hatchet, couldn't compare to this.
Nod your head, Sophie, or I'll start with the face.
I nodded. He removed the scarf from my mouth, careful not to inflict any undue discomfort. His gentle touch was terrifying.
Why?
I whispered.
Why?
He crouched over me.
Sophie, you surprise me. I thought you, of all people, would understand.
I don't. He sighed and gazed out the broken window.
This is my art.
Your art?
But can you not see it? I have, in fact, created a new art form. Just as Monet created Impressionism and Isadora Duncan created modern dance. I can now list myself amongst the greatest artistic geniuses of all time. And my art... My art is more powerful than anything that precedes it.
Had my fear affected my hearing, or was he truly this crazy?
Donato, this isn't art. This is murder. It's not revolutionary, it's not unique, it's evil.
For a split second, Donato's perfect face became distorted and twisted, then it smoothed back out to its elegant shape.
I thought you would see... But since you do not, allow me to enlighten you.
Art is simply a creative way to recreate the world that we already live in. Picasso did not invent the female face. He simply put it together in a manner that caused us to see it differently. But the ancient question is still on the minds and lips of every man or woman who has read a book, listened to a piece of music, or viewed a performance. Is it art that always imitates life? Or can life be made to imitate art? This last century has only served to make those questions more relevant. The child who shoots his schoolmates after seeing it done in a movie. Was the child violent because he was watching the film? Or was the movie violent because its creators had tapped into the mood of contemporary youth? I address this in my art. I take the more cerebral art of singers, filmmakers, and writers like yourself and make it more tangible, more passionate, more accessible. Surely you see the genius in that, the horrible beauty. Why, there has not been an artist that has had such a direct effect on the lives of people since Leni Riefenstahl.
Leni Riefenstahl? Leni Riefenstahl made films for Hitler equating Jews to rats. How is that related to what you're doing now? Are you some kind of whacked version of a neo-Nazi? Are you doing this because I'm Jewish?
Donato pulled himself to full height. You are not listening to me. I pulled my knees into my chest.
Donato ran his fingers through his hair.
Forgive me. He was smiling now. But I do not care about your religion. Nor do I harbor any ill will against the Jewish people. Neither did Riefenstahl.
The videos and the lectures from my college history courses began to flood into my mind.
Her art. Oh, God, she did it for her art.
Donato's smile widened.
Precisely. You do understand.
He again knelt by my side. Hitler gave her the opportunity to change the world through her art. To be allowed to make films so powerful that the citizenship of Germany was willing to stand by and applaud while the Nazis directed their dogs to rip apart the children of their Jewish neighbors. How could any true artist not envy the ability to achieve something so monumental, so earth-shattering?
I shook my head and tried not to hyperventilate. How had I missed it? It must always have been there, in his eyes. His eyes were insane. You killed them. All of them. In the name of art.
I assume you are referring to J.J. Money and Tolsky.
Yes, I did.
J.J. Money was at a social gathering. He lived in the penthouse above the apartment of a collector. That is how we met. I was able to draw him into conversation, and he spoke of his music. He claimed to be the voice of black urban youth. He defended the violence of his lyrics. After all, he was simply verbalizing an existing anger. He said the music was real, that it was that reality that people were afraid of. Donato laughed quietly. I am paraphrasing, of course. The exact slang he used is beyond my ability to repeat.
And that inspired you?
I knew it was a lost cause, but I had to reason with him. I had to try.
Donato, don't you get it? The sentiment in the music may have been real, but he wasn't actually hurting anyone.
Precisely. Donato's lips pulled back once more to display his white, glistening teeth. He had not gone far enough. He lacked the vision, the courage. It was left to me to bring his message to the hearts of the public. When he died, the world stopped and listened. Not just his fans, not just his critics, the world. Everyone was touched by his anger, by his magnificent rage.
So, did you become his lover as well?
It was a stall tactic. I just needed time to think, to come up with a way to do the impossible. The only lover that he truly desired had to be injected or inhaled. Those who love narcotics are easy to befriend and manipulate. I would visit my client, then travel up to see him, bearing gifts. Always bearing gifts. I do not think he knew that it was my plan to call DC Smooth. He was too high to notice when I took control.
And now DC is in prison suffering for your art.
Ah, that was perfect. Although the irony was missed. DC has a song that speaks of being unjustly accused due to the color of his skin.
No one made that connection. Perhaps I made his guilt a bit too convincing. I wriggled my wrists against the cord. There was no way of loosening it. I could try to keep him talking until Marcus returned from... From where? Not from getting wine. My breathing quickened and I forced myself to ask. Marcus? Marcus, you wish to know what has become of him?
Donato massaged his palm with his thumb.
He is at Coletto's with Dina and Marianne, awaiting your arrival. I told Marcus that you called to change the plans, and he informed the others. They know you may be late, so they will not be concerned. He checked his watch. But more time has passed than I had expected. We must get on with this. They are waiting for me as well, and I must do what is necessary to ensure that Marcus is given credit for this crime. I had originally planned to seduce Dina, but after my research I came to see that she does not allow men to enter her heart as easily as she allows them access to her bed. Marcus was more open, more vulnerable. He sighed and stood up. I do wish I could sign my work, but I must accept my required anonymity. He crossed to the clubs. Antolsky? I asked. Time. Please, God, give me time. Donato lifted a driver for his scrutiny. You shouldn't have fought me over the putter. I did so want to get the details right. How did you get to Tolsky? J.J. Money introduced us, Donato said, his eyes never leaving the club. Once I discovered the truth of his sexuality, the rest was simple. Margaret only needed the tape to end the marriage. I knew that she would destroy it, and once I convinced Alex that I, too, did not know of the tape, it was inevitable that he should turn to me for comfort. I vowed to help him repair his wretched union. The gratitude he expressed was truly touching, particularly after I offered to dictate a letter to Margaret that he could send to her. To my beloved wife, I cannot live without you. He wrote my words and drank my wine. He could not taste the Valium by his fifth drink. He only woke briefly when I made the cut, just long enough to cry out in pain, long enough for me to give him one last kiss. He pressed the club to his chest. I do think I loved him. He was beautiful in his suffering. Donato started toward me, the club loosely balancing in his hands. But do you know all this? You are stalling, and it has become tiring. Please. I wish you hadn't sent Barbie to the park that day. She interrupted my creative flow. My talent cannot be wasted on the insignificant. It was you who was supposed to die. Donato, shh. The scarf was in my mouth again. He caressed my cheek. If I had not known that you would come to suspect me, I would have chosen you as my lover. It would have made this moment all the more poignant. The tears were blurring my vision. I tried to make some last protest, but choked on the silk. Shh. Do not worry. Your art will now be given the serious attention it has always deserved. I squeezed my eyes closed and tried to remember how to pray. Donato cried out. I opened my eyes to see that the source of his vexation was Dina. She had somehow confiscated his driver and was swinging it at his head. He grabbed the club from her and threw it down. Then he lunged for her. But I managed to kick my feet out in front of him and he crashed face down onto the ground. Dina jumped on his back, her heeled boots causing him to howl in pain. I looked over at the crystal vase resting on the side table. She could use it as a weapon. I tried to tell her as much, but the scarf made that impossible. I frantically started to push my bound form along like a snake, in hopes that by moving toward it, I might be able to draw her attention to the vase. She took no notice, and instead leaped off his back and dove for her tote bag, which she had dropped on the floor. Donato began to rise, his teeth bared. I looked up at the vase, willing Dina to do the same, but in the moment that my eyes were averted, I heard a snapping noise and Donato's guttural scream. I refocused on Dina. She was standing above Donato with a whip that she had apparently cracked across the side of his face, hitting his right eye in the process. He was on his knees, clutching it with both hands. At last, she looked in my direction and realized my purpose. She skirted Donato's arm as he flung it out in an attempt to grab her, and seized the vase. The sound of the crystal breaking over his head echoed in my eardrums, and then there was silence. Donato lay motionless on the floor. She ran to my side, took out the scarf, and started working on the wire.
Jesus. Okay, hang on. Are you all right?
Yes. I felt the wire loosen, and I yanked my hands free and threw them around Dina's neck. Oh, my God, thank you. Thank you. He was going to... Oh, God, Dina, how did you know I was here?
We were supposed to have dinner here, weren't we? She asked, pushing my hair away from her mouth.
But it was relocated to Coletto's. He said Marcus called you.
Well, if he did, I didn't get the message. But the golf club among the shards of glass on the sidewalk, that message I got loud and clear.
She pulled away from the embrace.
You have to call the police now, and I'm not fucking kidding this time.
I nodded and tried to wipe away the layers of tears from my cheeks. I looked over at the whip, now lying motionless several feet from Donato, but decided I wasn't ready to comment on that yet. I'm calling. I'm calling right now. I didn't wait for Dina to reconnect the phone, but searched the floor for my cell instead. It lay adjacent to Donato's body. As I reached for it, I saw his hand twitch. Oh, God! I snapped back my arm and bolted for the opposite end of the room. He's coming, too. I think he's coming.
Relax. This isn't a movie. Even if he does come to, he won't be able to do much more than moan and writhe around in pain. But if it will make you feel better...
Dina went to her tote bag and pulled out a pair of handcuffs lined with purple faux fur.
Ta-da!
She latched them onto Donato.
I have a matching blindfold, too. Should we use it?
You carry those around with you?
I just came from Jason's. The whip's just for looks. At least it was until now.
Okay. I tiptoed over to my phone and snatched it out of Donato's proximity. I'm going to call the police now, and, I'm just going to let you tell them about the cuffs and the whip. Cool?
For Christ's sake, it's not like I was carrying a concealed weapon or anything.
No, that would be easier to explain.
Chapter 21. Since the majority of domestic abuse victims are women, it seems appropriate that every woman be allowed to seriously injure one man a year in order to maintain a healthy social balance. Sex, drugs, and murder.
L'chaim.
Marianne, Dina, and I raised our glasses over our pizza. Sometimes the most traditional toasts are the most appropriate. 2 weeks had passed since Donato's arrest, and this was the first time since then that any of us had felt emotionally stable enough to go out and celebrate his incarceration. Dina swished the wine around in her mouth before swallowing.
So, I read in the paper yesterday that Donato confessed to every detail of his crimes, including the planting of the hatchet in Anatoly's room, but he's still refusing representation.
Why would he want representation, I asked, pulling my second piece of pizza from the pie. He's proud of the murders he's committed. He certainly doesn't want anyone to try to pass them off as acts of insanity. Now he's finally able to sign his work.
I still don't get why he did it, Marianne said, putting a hand delicately over her mouth to hide the food that was still in there.
The busboy clearing the next table smiled shyly at her.
Marianne was the only woman I knew who could attract men while talking with her mouth full.
Dina shook her head slightly and lifted the wine bottle to refill everyone's glass.
For once, I'm glad you don't get it. That man was beyond sick. Let's just be grateful that his last masterpiece was left unfinished.
Yeah, no shit, I agreed.
You know, D.C. Smooth called me last week to thank me. They let him out just in time for him to see his kid being born.
Oh, and Mark Bacon should be thanking me too, since he no longer has to worry about getting the death sentence.
Of course, he'll still do time in prison for drug possession and breaking Barbie's restraining order against him. Dina laughed.
You can't ask for a neater wrap-up than that. This is what you should write a screenplay about, Sophie. It's got all the ingredients. Drama, violence, a little romance, and three chicks who know how to kick butt.
I'll drink to that. I drank half the contents of my refilled glass in one gulp. There are still a few loose ends hanging around, though.
Such as?
Marianne asked.
Well, there's Marcus, for one. He's taking this whole thing really hard. I've been over at his place every day this week, and he's a mess. He's basically spent the last 14 days alternating between crying and vomiting.
Wow, Marianne's eyes widened in sympathy. I can't even imagine what he's feeling. I'm surprised he agreed to meet us.
I glanced at my watch and then at the door. He said he was going to be here 15 minutes ago, so maybe he changed his mind. I shook my head in disappointment. I told him he should see someone to help him through this.
Dina raised an eyebrow. You mean like a shrink?
Yes, I mean a shrink. He just found out that his best boy toy was a pseudo-Nazi serial killer who tried to bludgeon his best friend with a putter. In my book, that kind of revelation is worthy of a few therapy sessions. I looked toward the door again.
Okay, Marcus just walked in. Just don't talk about it and try to look supportive in case he needs to shed a few more tears.
Dina's and Marianne's heads turned in his direction. He was wearing a perfectly fitted pair of Calvin Klein's, a beautiful khaki shirt that he had picked up with me while shopping at Armani Exchange a few months back, and a smile that would stop traffic. Dina shot me a look.
Oh yeah, he looks real depressed.
He was. Marcus finally made it over to our table. Hello, darlings. He pulled out the empty chair next to me and gave me a breezy kiss on the cheek.
Marcus, you seem, refreshingly non-suicidal.
He adjusted the rolls on his sleeves so that they displayed his forearms in a more flattering manner.
Well, I took your advice and I went out and got myself my very own shrink.
I gave you that advice 2 days ago, so you can't have seen this guy more than once. Is he a miracle worker or something?
Honey, you have no idea. I met him at the stud. He's 5'8" and has curly black hair and the most adorable wire-rimmed glasses. He got his master's in psychology at Stanford a few years back, and he's just 20 internship hours away from getting his license. I'm telling you, it was lust at first sight.
Marcus, that's not what I meant.
Who cares what you meant, Dina said. Obviously, this guy is exactly what the doctor ordered. Besides, I've always felt that sex therapy is underused. You'd be surprised how many problems can be solved with a good screw.
You said it, girlfriend. Marcus pulled out the largest remaining slice of pizza and put it on his plate. Daniel is very good at showing me alternative methods for dealing with my frustrations.
Speaking of sex, he shook a fork at Dina. I read that little bit about you in the Metro.
Marianne groaned, but Dina grinned like the Cheshire Cat.
Can you believe it? Talk about an image change. I've gone from being the girl your mother warned you about to the admirable heroine who can take down serial killers. And I love the article's title.
She moved her hands in the air as if she were spreading out the words in front of us.
Thank God for furry handcuffs, she laughed. Even I couldn't have come up with a better headline. You know, since that came out, my business has doubled. Everybody wants me to show them how to properly use a whip.
Marianne protested. Some of us are trying to eat. She flipped her curls over her shoulder and took a bite of her fourth slice.
Have you talked to Anatoly yet?
I lowered my eyes and readjusted the napkin on my lap.
No, I've been kind of busy.
All of the charges against Anatoly had been dropped. After the incident with Donato, my memory of what had happened the night before had become very blurred and confused. I didn't confess to filing a false police report or anything silly like that, but it quickly became clear that I no longer made a convincing witness. I hadn't talked to him since that night, and his silence was becoming increasingly conspicuous.
You're gonna have to do it sometime, Dina goaded.
I will. I'm just waiting for...
For what? Dina gave me a disdainful look. An engraved invitation?
Guys don't usually send those out to women who frame them for murder, Marcus pointed out.
Okay, I know. The ball's in my court. So, go run with it.
Dina reached down and retrieved my purse from the floor.
We'll take care of the check. You have another loose end that needs tying.
After standing outside Anatoly's apartment building for well over an hour, I knew exactly how many cracks were in the sidewalk in front, not to mention how long they were and how many jagged points each one had. I bit my lip and looked up at the glass door. Maybe it wasn't a good day to do this. Plus, I really should call first. I nodded decisively. That was it then. Procrastination was definitely the way to go. I turned on my heel, determined to go home and discuss the matter with Mr. Katz. I heard the door open and close. I didn't have to look. I knew it was him. I could feel him glaring at me. I inhaled and turned back around. Oh, yeah, that was the glare.
Anatoly.
Hi. I was just finishing up a walk. You've been standing here for an hour and a half. I could see you from my window.
Really?
Gosh, I thought it was more like an hour and 20 minutes.
Not even a smile.
If you saw me out here, how come you didn't come down sooner?
Why should I do anything to make your life easier?
Good point. Okay, different approach. I clasped my hands behind my back, lowered my head a notch, and peered up at him.
You look good.
Anatoly wasn't buying. I sighed and threw up my hands.
Okay, I'm sorry. I am really and truly sorry.
Not good enough.
Oh, come on, Anatoly, can't you give a girl a break?
I have a bullet wound in my arm.
Okay. That was bad. But hey, it's just a flesh wound, right? And if you wear a short-sleeved shirt, you'll be sporting one kick-ass conversation piece.
The chicks will be lining up to...
No one is more repulsive than a rapist.
But do you know who takes a close second?
Donato?
Someone who falsely accuses a man of rape.
Now, wait, I never accused you of rape. I held my hand up in protest. I told the police that you got a little aggressive during a makeout session. I backed out. You got pissed and tried to beat the shit out of me.
Oh, and I said that I thought you had killed a few people, but I swear to God, that was it.
Anatoly stared at me, speechless.
Well, that's a little better, isn't it?
Anatoly shook his head.
You are the most perverted and conniving woman I have ever met.
Oh, now, hold on. I strode forward until there was only a few feet between us.
I thought you were trying to kill me, and I had every reason to think so. You may not be a murderer, but you were stalking me. You broke into my apartment, took photos of me without my knowledge, fed me a line of bullshit about your being a contractor, and then you pulled a gun on me.
You were threatening me with a broken bottle.
Uh-huh.
Right. The gun didn't just magically appear when I broke the bottle, okay?
Tell me, how did you plan on explaining that one during my little seduction number, hmm?
Didn't you think I would notice that you had a concealed weapon strapped to your leg when I took off your pants?
I could have taken it off without your being aware of it. If we had gotten that far, you would have been distracted by what else I had hidden under my pants.
Oh, and what would that be?
Your brain? Because that's obviously where you keep it.
Anatoly was clenching his fist now.
I wasn't going to go into your apartment unprotected. Last time I was there, you pulled a butcher knife on me.
I thought...
I know what you thought. And I thought you were the killer. I have never met an innocent person who was more effective at making themselves look guilty.
Me? I was the victim in...
I stopped myself. This was not why I had come. Yes, he was pissed, but if I was the one who had been shot and thrown in jail, I might be a little ticked off too.
I took a few deep breaths and tried not to grit my teeth.
I'm sorry. I know what I put you through, and I can't imagine how I could ever make it up to you. I made a huge mistake, and you suffered for it. I did come close to losing my own life because of my little blunder. So maybe you can take some comfort in that.
Anatoly's shoulders relaxed a little. His gaze went past me to the parked cars on the street.
The image of Donato standing over you with a golf club isn't one that I find comforting. His eyes shifted back to me.
He didn't hurt you, did he?
I broke into a broad grin.
Well, what do you know? You do care about me.
Don't be ridiculous. I was just curious. If you were a stranger, I would have asked you the same question.
Ah, I see. I didn't tell the papers this.
But he did fracture one of my ribs.
He did what?
Anatoly's jaw tightened and he clenched his hands into fists.
If I could get my hands on that son of a bitch, I'd have him begging for the lethal injection.
He looked at me with concern.
How are you now? Do you need to sit down?
Actually, I was just messing with you.
Thanks to Dina and her S&M toys, I got through the whole thing without a scratch.
By the way Anatoly was staring at me, you would have thought I had grown a second head.
You really are completely insane, aren't you? He asked.
Maybe. But I think I proved my point. I leaned closer to him.
You like me.
At the moment, I'd like to throw you into the bay. I rolled my eyes.
There are easier ways to get me wet.
Anatoly burst out laughing.
I can't believe you just said that.
Actually, I can't believe it either. I've been spending too much time with Dina lately. I put a gentle finger on the spot on his arm where he had been injured. I really am sorry about this.
I've been through worse, he said.
His expression softened as he looked into my eyes. After our first few encounters, I was ready to take you off my list of suspects. At that point, I was looking forward to getting to know you on a more personal level.
There it was, that sexy little half-smile of his.
But then you forced me to reconsider.
I'm glad my first instincts were correct.
I'm glad you're not a murderer.
I'm glad you're not a murderer, too.
So we can agree on something.
I took a step closer. So does that mean you still want to get to know me on a more personal level?
No.
I laughed. Okay, fair enough. How about on a professional level? You remember my mentioning to you that my sister thought her husband was having an affair?
Vaguely.
Well, she's decided to hire a private investigator, and considering your experience, I was hoping you could recommend somebody.
Anatoly snorted and shook his head.
Kidding. Really, I'd like to hire you. How much would it cost me to find out if my brother-in-law is a conniving rat?
For you?
$6,000 for the first month's work.
$6,000? Is that how much PIs make?
No, for the job you're describing, I usually charge less than half that. But considering all you've done for me, I decided to give you a special.
Gee, thanks. I tried unsuccessfully to push my hair behind my ears and took in a deep breath of the crisp, clear air.
Well, it's a hell of a lot cheaper than a civil suit.
You're hired.
Anatoly took a step back.
For $6,000? You thought you priced yourself out, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Guess you calculated wrong, huh?
Can I introduce you to my sister tomorrow?
Anatoly seemed to be at a rare loss for words.
Finally, he stuffed his hands in his pockets and stared up at the sky.
1 o'clock at your place?
Sounds good. I started to leave, but Anatoly took hold of my arm.
I have a condition.
Okay.
If either one of you threatens me with a sharp object, I quit. No refunds.
Then he turned around and returned to his apartment. I crossed my arms in front of me and watched until the door came to a complete close.
Oh, yeah. He wants me.
This has been an Audible Inc. and Harlequin production of Sex, Murder, and a Double Latte by Kira Davis. Read by Gabra Zachman. Executive Producer, Beth Anderson. Supervising Producer, Arthur G. Insana. Produced and directed by Michelle McGonigal. Engineered by Mike Charzik. Edited by Common Mode. Music composed by Michael Whalen. Post-production and Music Supervisor, George James. Copyright 2005 by Kira Davis. Production copyright 2005 by Audible Inc. All rights reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or in part in any form. This edition is published by arrangement with Harlequin Books, S.A. All characters in this book are fictitious. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.